You're listening to a 1FM podcast.
And I've got a very special guest sitting next to me who is the Community Liaison Officer for Ambulance Victoria. And it is Stefan who has been kind enough to join us here. Stefan, thank you very much for coming on to 1FM Live and Local. Really appreciate you popping up, mate.
Thanks very much, Jason. Thanks.
And now, are you Melbourne-based and up here visiting, or are you local?
I work in the Hume region, so I cover from Corryong to Cobram and Wallen to Wodonga.
That's a fair amount of miles that you must clock up in a typical week.
Yes, I work, and so most of my role is to coordinate and liaise with the communities and organise these events, and then I work getting the local paramedics who are part of the community. They don't just work in the community, they actually live in the community, and I get them to come to these events. So I have a couple of local paramedics tonight with me who have volunteered to come to this event and join with the community to sort of try and educate and teach them about some of the current messaging that we have.
Yeah, yeah, and it's been particularly important. We know that just the stress on the health system at the minute with COVID-19, gee, I don't really know where to start, Stefan, because there's so much to actually talk about, and I might ask that you can hang around and actually have a chat. We've got a whole another hour after the news comes up in 4 minutes' time, because I'm absolutely fascinated to talk about, you know, the role that you guys have played across the pandemic and over the last 2 years, the role that you're playing now with the Omicron variant sweeping through the nation, here in Victoria, and when the kids go back to school, which is obviously going to happen next week. Yes. And what that's all going to look like. So there's so much to talk about, but we'll do that after the news. So let's firstly just talk about how you actually joined the Ambulance Victoria, and because it's quite a hefty education requirement that is necessary to become a ambulance officer.
Yes, I joined a bit over 2 decades ago, and it was slightly different then. So I was employed by Ambulance Victoria. It was Metropolitan Ambulance at the time. We had Metropolitan and Rural Ambulance, the different services. I was employed by Metropolitan Ambulance, and I was trained on the job. So, in essence, it was an apprenticeship, a highly skilled apprenticeship. But in those 2 decades, we've changed from being BLS, Basic Life Support Ambulance Officers, to now highly qualified and highly trained paramedics that do a 3- and 4-year degree at university and then go on and do further studies when they do their MICA studies or other areas. So I sort of came in through the door of training as I went, which I loved. And you would work with a more qualified person than yourself, which we still do. We still mentor the students. We work with them for a 12-month period, but they've already got the studies behind them, and we just give them the ambulance and how to work through the community.
And how many hours on an average week would an ambulance officer do at this point in time?
So we have, supposed to be a 40-hour week or a 38-hour week, like most people. So we have different roster structures. When I started, we had a 10-14 roster, similar to the fire. So 2 10-hour days, 2 14-hour nights, followed by 4 off. That structure's changed because of the dynamics of with ambulance. We've got far more utilisation rates, so those long night shifts are less healthy for us. And we've got lots more roster cycles now. But it's a 38-hour week, but most people end up working a lot more, because if you're on a job, you can't just go home at 5 o'clock.
No.
So you usually end up working several hours overtime, at least a week.
Yeah, well, look, I want to chat a little bit more about the actual pandemic and COVID. We won't get too philosophical or political or anything like that at all. So I won't, proverbially throw you under the bus, so don't.
Oh, that's all right. I've got an ambulance up there.
Yeah,
and
if
a good crew.
I do, yeah. Well, yeah, well, you should be actually right tonight then if I was to do that. But no, I would love to continue the conversation. Just with events like this, I mean, how good is it to actually have them back and being physically present at community type events is something I think that maybe we've taken for granted prior to the pandemic?
Oh, it's fantastic to be back doing this live and actually just to be able to talk with people and be around people and just see the joy of the children coming and climbing through the ambulance and teaching them CPR and then talking to the parents. It's absolutely fabulous and we love doing this. This is the positive side of our job. We're a reactive service. Mm. This is the proactive arm of ambulance and it's just lovely and to be able to give back to the community this way and to have such a great attendance tonight is fantastic.
It is amazing. I was a little bit concerned when the night first kicked off that there wasn't a great amount of people, but maybe they were just waiting for it to cool down because, wow, this is certainly one of the larger community-based events, that I've seen for quite some time. So fantastic that people are getting out in force. Hey, we're about to head off to the news, but stick around and we're going to chat. Yeah, we're going to chat a little bit more after the news to Stefan from Ambulance Victoria.
1FM.
And you're on 1FM, live and local, out and about in the community for 2022. And we are extremely pleased. As a matter of fact, we're honoured to be here on the Great Things Happens truck for the city of Greater Shepparton at the St. George's Road Food Festival, which is a brilliant and vibrant community event here. And with thanks to Thompson Kia, thank you for letting us use the truck also as well. We'll get it out and about in the community lots and lots this year. I'm going to continue the conversation with Stefan from Ambulance Victoria. Now, Stefan, in the break, we're talking about the impacts of COVID, not just on the community, but also on the workforce of Ambulance Victoria. And I did mention just before the break that quite clearly there is a massive amount of stress on the health system at the moment, just with the additional workload, because something that I think's been kind of lost by people is that people are still having other health issues that Ambulance Victoria has to deal with all of the time anyway, and now we've got this to deal with on top of it, which is additional workload, nowhere near comparable, of course, to influenza, which some have attempted to compare this to, but it's certainly so much different to that. But just first of all, tell us about how the pandemic has impacted the workforce and how, I guess, us as a community need to really look at the utilization of ambulances, you know, in a medical situation where it, you know, perhaps might not actually be an emergency requiring a paramedic to attend.
Look, it's been an incredibly busy time and it's exhausting for everybody in all industries. And the pandemic continues to have an unprecedented demand on the entire health service.
Yeah.
So what we're really looking at is the number of people that we are currently triaging. We have a secondary triage in the ambulance and we're currently triaging about 1,000 cases a day that are non-emergency. People call up 000 and it's one in five cases that we're actually having to redirect to one of the other areas. And there are other areas that people can use. So there is your local GP, there is the nurse on call, or there are pharmacists. And just for people, I'll give you the nurse on call number while I have a
Please
moment.
Please do, yes. Yeah.
So 1-300-60-6024. And they have lots of information about COVID. But with the unprecedented demand and the unprecedented impact on everybody with the pandemic, it's also impacting the ambulance service. So we currently have hundreds of paramedics that are in isolation, either because they have COVID or because they've been close contacts. And that impacts our workforce dramatically. And so all of these extra cases that we're having to manage then impact our ability to service the sickest Victorians. So we are trying to work, and we're, you know, working extremely hard, and we're very grateful to all our surge partners that we've had come on board that are helping us to fill in some of the areas that we need. So we're working with the CFA, the SES, ADF are coming down again, St. John's Ambulance, Life Saving Victoria, and our own paramedic students, and they've all been helping fill some of the ambulances so that we actually are able to work and continue to see the sickest Victorians. And what we want to do is we want people to keep 000 for emergencies. So emergencies such as chest pain, if you feel like having a heart attack, or severe shortness of breath. If people have large burns in the summertime, people have barbecues, or they have incidences where they get fire, they get, you know, large burns. So those kind of activities we need to be called to.
Uncontrolled seizures.
Uncontrolled seizures, unconscious, people that are having diabetic comas, people that collapse. Heat at the moment is a significant issue. So we want, you know, we're trying to teach people to be heat
hydrated.
Wise. So we want them to stay hydrated, stay out of the sun, wear a hat, look after each other. Look in on your neighbour. If you haven't seen your neighbour for a couple of days in these extreme heat days, just check on them, because maybe they haven't got their air conditioning on, or maybe they're not drinking enough water. So just the normal things and the normal community things that we want to do, all these help the big picture, which is what we're trying to work for. And it's, you know, we're prioritising the sickest Victorians by re-triaging, by having all the extra workforces, people that have been in hospitals will have seen some of the surge partners that I've discussed, where they help us out to manage patients, because the hospitals are under so much pressure at the moment. And they're dealing with lots of people that are also furloughed because of, they're in isolation because of COVID themselves. And we just are hoping for that sort of, once people are vaccinated, that they'll be able to get over this whole issue, and we can sort of start moving on and come to great festivals like this and enjoy some of the things that we have enjoyed before.
Yeah, look, I mean, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and, you know, I don't really want to get political, but it's hard not to talk about the fact that there's still unvaccinated people out in the community. And I wish I was able to say, look, you know, you should be free to choose your body, your choice. However, in a global pandemic, and I've personally done a lot of research on the issue and how, I guess, the pandemic looks in various countries at an organic level, you know, right around the world. And what I've found with that research is that vaccines are really our only defense against this virus, and there are still people out there that, for whatever reason, are hesitant. And there are people that have got genuine
concerns and medical conditions.
That's
absolutely
right, and that's fine, and have had, you know, reactions to flu shots and things like that. Look, I mean, how effective do you think, as a medical professional, vaccines are against COVID? And if anyone was listening to this that wasn't vaccinated, what would your advice be?
I think, from a working in the health system, vaccination is our way to try and control the severity of the conditions that people are getting. It reduces the number of hospitalizations, it reduces the number of intensive care patients, and it reduces the number of deaths. And that's what we have at the moment. We're the mask wearing, washing hands, staying our socially distancing. These are all adjuncts. They all work very well, and they've been very effective. And that, in combination with vaccinations, I'm not an epidemiologist.
No, that's fine.
But from our perspective, we see that the vaccinations are having an impact, and they are making an impact where we are seeing people who are less sick. And on that note, a lot of people are worried about catching COVID or being exposed to COVID, and we understand that in the ambulance service, and we receive a lot of these calls, and if we do get these calls, we direct them and try to give them the information that's important. But a lot of these cases don't need hospitalisation, they don't need an emergency ambulance, and a lot of people with mild symptoms can be managed at home. And there is that the nurse on call that I gave just before, they have a lot of information about that, as do ambulance when we do provide it for these people. So
do you think that the Omicron variant could potentially be the end of the pandemic as we've known it for the last 2 years, in terms of, you know, high rates of infection and potential natural immunity, herd immunity? We reiterate the fact that neither of us are epidemiologists at all, but we've all done, I guess, some level of a degree of epidemiology, whether we've liked it or not, because we've followed this, you know, so closely for the last couple of years. But, I mean, we're seeing in Europe now, and we seem to sort of lag about 6 months behind, frustratingly, when we didn't have access to enough of the vaccines. We won't even get started there. But what we're seeing in some European countries is the relaxation of some of the restrictions around how they've responded to the virus in various European countries that have had much higher caseloads than what we've had. Are we seeing perhaps a peak and potentially 2022 is a much more positive
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I look at it from the ambulance perspective and the emergency side. Omicron is extremely contagious. It is, you know, it is spreading through the community dramatically. And I look that they're using the Greek alphabet, and so we've had Delta, and then the next one is Om. So there's been a number of other strains that have passed through that have not impacted upon us as dramatically as this variant. I don't know if this is going to be it, but I think that with vaccinations, with people still maintaining the safe distancing and mask wearing, washing hands, I think we're going to see an improvement in hospitalizations and in people's general health from an emergency perspective. And I'm hoping, like everybody else, that that'll be the case.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, we all are, and it's just about, I guess, trying to breathe some hope back into the community, back into the local economy, back into, you know, many areas of our lives that we just haven't been able to, I guess, really have a great deal of confidence about as a result of, you know, the continued requirement to lock down. And by and large, what we have seen is a massive uptake of the vaccines.
Yes.
So it really is the squeaky wheel that sometimes gets the oil. And that's no offence to anybody that's chosen differently. No. I respect your choice 100%. But, yeah, it certainly feels as though to me that it's definitely been the right thing to do. And to be able to decrease the pressure that is on medical professionals such as yourself, if that's what we can do to help, then I think that that's, you know, super important. And, you know, it's what needs to happen for us to be able to deal with. And again, I'll reiterate the point that there are people out there having strokes, having heart attacks, having falls from ladders, you know, accidents.
Absolutely.
And requiring emergency care,
and
hospitalization. That's still happening.
Yes.
And we've got this on top of it. So, I mean, if there's any level of protection that we can create as a community, and, you know, these vaccines are a little bit of a barrier, then, you know, they might not be perfect as well. We know that too. But I just think that, yeah, people out there listening in, if you haven't already got your booster shot and you're due for it, perhaps go and get it. And I'm in the position at the moment where I actually have to consider my youngest child, who returns to school next week, I'm now being eligible for the vaccine, getting her vaccinated as well. So it's a very real decision that many parents out there would be having to make now as their kids go back to school. They're requiring a rapid antigen test twice a week.
Yes.
It's all being supplied by the education department, the state and federal government, in the supply of the RAT tests, which were pretty hard to get there a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, it really does seem as though it's the most effective way that we can deal with this as best as we can.
And look, we all hope that with the increasing uptake of vaccinations, which is what the health department have done their studies, and we believe that it is having a good impact, and it will take some of that pressure off the emergency services and the healthcare system. So we're all working towards that, and we're seeing a really good response, and that's important.
So just a reminder out there to the general community who use ambulance services, when should you perhaps look for an alternative direction as far as dealing with your medical situation?
Look, I think it's probably easier to highlight the times when you probably should call an ambulance, just because emergencies, everybody has a different degree of what an emergency is, and we appreciate that what may be urgent for somebody may not be for necessarily for the emergency services. So people that are having chest pain that may be their heart, we don't want to see people with heart attacks staying at home. We want them to be treated in hospital because we can do so much for them, and we can get them back into the community and get them living good, strong lives again. People, if they're having numbness in their arm or leg or in their face, stroke symptoms, if they lose their speech, if they become unconscious, we want these people to be emergency cases, because once again the advancement in technology and medicine for treating people with stroke symptoms is so advanced now that we are able to get people back with very minimal damage in some cases. We want to look at people with, the, as we talked about, burns, or people that have had accidents, either car accidents or other accidents. So you can have a bicycle accident,
workplace,
or fall off a horse, workplace accidents. These are serious accidents, need to be called 000. We want people that are having shortness of breath. So there are still people that suffer from asthma and chronic airway obstructive disease. They need to call 000 when they're having shortness of breath. Take their medications as they're prescribed and then call 000 if that doesn't work. We want to look at people that are having extreme pain. Sometimes people have abdominal pain and it may be just mild, but extreme pain may be something significant. And we need those to be treated quickly. And of course, the unconscious person or the unresponsive person, we want them to be 000. And that leads on to one of the things that we've been doing up there in our little stall. We've got our mannequins out, and I've got my paramedics and my community officer helping out. And we're trying to sort of show people how much work it takes to do CPR, so cardiopulmonary resuscitation. We call it CPS now. We call it call, push, shock. If someone's collapsed, call an ambulance. Push on their chest between the breast, on the breastbone, the chest bone, between the nipples. Push hard and fast, about 100 times a minute. People say sing Staying Alive, a little bit ironic, or row, row, row your boat. But it's fast, it's hard, and keep doing it until help comes and relieves you from that, or because you're too tired. And then call 000. But we want people to use an AED, which is the automated external defibrillators. People see them around. They're located in the supermarkets. They're located at the community halls, at the council buildings. There are small...
footy clubs.
Footy clubs. A lot of the sporting clubs have them. We want people to be comfortable using the AED. And they're safe, they're simple, and they could save a life. You don't need training. Anyone can do it. And it's just a matter of following the instructions, which simply is you remove the clothes at the top, you put the pads on the chest, and it will analyse if somebody needs to have a shock. And it'll tell you. And you push the button, and then you start CPR again. So we train people with this. We work through to make them comfortable, because 80% of cardiac arrests happen in the home. So it's going to be someone you know or a family member.
Yep.
So it's a really important sort of skill that we learn, and this is a really good time for this, but these are 000 calls.
And, yeah, that sort of education could make a real difference.
Absolutely. We were having so many successes. We had a magnificent success last week in another regional town where the community responded to someone that had collapsed. They started CPR. They grabbed an AED, which was on the outside of a tennis club. They used it successfully. And when the ambulance arrived, he was sitting up asking what happened. He was taken to hospital. He was still significantly sick, but we were able to manage him with his symptoms and treat him further. And this is such an important part of the chain of survival, where it's the public that recognise it, that call 000, that start the CPR. Then eventually an ambulance and a hospital gets called into it, but it's these important steps at the beginning. And we also are promoting a Good Sam, which is a worldwide mobile phone app.
Yep.
And people sign up. It's a voluntary thing, and all you have to be is over 18 and able to do CPR. And so if an alert came for a cardiac arrest, you would receive an alert on your phone. If you're able to attend, you would go and you would help do CPR on somebody before the ambulance arrived.
Wow.
And this has such a massive impact. And so people do this and they jump into the community and they help. So when we arrive, the person's been getting CPR, pushing on the chest, and that helps pump the blood around. And that saves lives.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic initiative, and it's really important in the country because distances. There's not an ambulance on every corner, as everybody knows.
No, and also probably resources.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
you can only have so many and
that's right.
being tied up with hospitals.
Limited in metropolitan as well, but yeah, look, distances... You know, time, time lapsed, you know, between call and arrival. It's all circumstantial based on, you know, what else is happening at that point in time. And, I mean, what I think the federal and state governments need to do is support Ambulance Victoria, Ambulance New South Wales, Ambulance everywhere.
Yes.
To get the message out about these alternate options that, I'll be honest, I'd never even heard of this app before today.
Right.
And I don't personally know how to do CPR either. So that's something that I need to educate myself on.
Well, we'll get you to come up to our stall straight after
you
your radio show.
Yeah, exactly.
We might do it on air.
You might very well. I don't know if we'll have time because we've only got 34 minutes left and we're done. So thank you so very much, Stefan. It's been a fantastic chat and I'm glad you were able to stick around for us. Thank you for coming here to Shepparton, and you know, isn't it just great to be part of this
fantastic
community event in the way that we've been able to do it, which has, you know, been something that we've missed for quite some time. So keep on doing the great work that you're doing in the community, and you know, thanks so much for popping on, and your message has been really important and hopefully heard by some people that will really make a difference too. So thanks.
Thanks, Jay. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, and what a fantastic festival it is, and we're very grateful that we were invited by the Shepparton Shire. It's just a terrific occasion, and the weather is magnificent, and there's a lot of people here, and there's some great food. So come up, have a look, say hello, and we'll show you how to do CPR.
Sounds great to me.
Thanks, Jay.
You're on 1FM, live and local.
SDP Tax have been your trusted local accounting firm and have been proudly helping people just like you across the Goulburn Valley and beyond for over two decades. Are you happy with your accountant? Are you certain that you are receiving maximum tax reductions? Call SDP Tax on 1300 346 829 and start a conversation today. SDP offer a maximum deduction guarantee. That's right, SDP guarantee that they'll find you the greatest deductions possible. With no upfront fee charged, what are you waiting for? Call today. There is no business too small. Call 1300 346 829 or visit www.sdptax.com.
1FM sponsor. Station sponsors McNamara Real Estate are now servicing the entire Goulburn Valley area. Our proud local family-run business is pleased to offer you a comprehensive service that comes with decades of local real estate experience between our team and is the region's best value agency, offering the area's only all-inclusive capped price commission rates. That's right, capped price commission. So if you're considering selling your home, please contact McNamara Real Estate on 5831 6405. That's 5831 6405. Or visit us at mcnamararealestate.com.au.
Pat and Tina's BP Service Station North Shepparton has been serving people living in and visiting our region for now more than 50 years. There's no other place you can still experience driveway service delivered with a smile, the old-fashioned way. Supplier of BP Ultimate Fuels, they will wash your windows, check under your bonnet, and even do your tyres while you wait. Next time you're filling up, do it at Pat and Tina's BP Service Station, GV Highway, North Shepparton.
1FM sponsor.
We're back. The Tungama Hotel is not just your everyday country pub. It's a Goulburn Valley institution. Established in 1891, the beautiful heritage-listed building is worth the visit alone. On the Silo Art Trail, the Tungama Hotel offers quality lunch and dinners, eat-in or take-away, as well as accommodation, including some brand-new en-suite rooms. It's family and dog-friendly, as well as offers catering for all functions, including weddings and parties. Open 7 days for lunch and dinner. Why not organise a group and grab the courtesy bus? A Tungama Hotel, more than just a country pub.
1FM sponsor.
You're listening to a 1FM podcast.